kind of coming together and supporting me in a way that I needed is just like, it feels new, you know, because I think like you, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm going to put my head down to do it. And if I can get it done, then I'm not doing enough and I need to do more, you know.
Yeah.
And just the idea that I couldn't step in and that it'll gave other people room to step in. I think it's a really important thing to learn as a somebody creating an organization and a movement, you know, is making sure you leave space for other people to be gracious and
100%.
Contribute. So,
well, and I'm glad that the community stepped up. I mean, I think we have a really great community on many levels, and communities, types of communities.
Yeah.
So Mira, Music Portland, tell me all about it.
Oh, it was a crazy 7 years ago. I started every time I started having a couple of drinks, I would start ranting about how Portland was losing its musical center and people I knew were moving away and venues were closing. And it just felt like we had this precious thing that was dribbling out for lack of attention. And so there were, I had 2 years of hosted roundtable discussions. And then my family got so sick of listening to me kvetch that,
Did they say oy vey?
I wish they did. It would have really set the tone, but no, they just were like, look, just stop bitching about it. Just do something. So I quit my 30-year corporate career and the paycheck that came with it and started Music Portland with Chris Young of, Vortex Music Magazine. And that was 5 years ago. And then a year and a half, 2 years ago, we, splintered off our 501c3 part to Music Oregon. So Music Portland focuses on the economic infrastructure policy issues of music as a profession, as a commercial endeavor. And Music Oregon focuses on the creative, cultural, and equity concerns of it as a cultural group.
And tell me about your corporate job that you quit. What was,
well,
what
it's
were
weird.
You
There's
doing
all
for
of
so
these,
many years?
All of this news about Alaska Airlines has been really kind of weird.
Oh,
and
you mean the airplane that completely,
the airplane that just,
you could see the outside of the,
it's a part that fell off. We'll just leave it at that.
No,
parts fall off. I don't know. It is, it's kind of terrifying, but, so I worked in, aviation data. So, a lot of people may not know it, but one of the largest data aggregators of real-time flight information is here in Portland. And so I was a senior VP with them and, had worked before that in unscheduled aviation for 15 years. So, people meet you and they're like, I used to represent photographers too, back in the East Coast. And, people say, oh, when did you get your first brownie? When did you first fall in love with photography? I'm like, I don't take pictures. And people would say, when did you first solo in aviation? I was like, I don't really care about flying. What it taught me was that I like data and I like the way that information can tell stories and that the lack of information really disadvantages anybody trying to do anything. So that's a lot of what I brought to this whole project is like, sorry, I'm a data wonk. And, you know, I will talk until your eyes glaze over with facts, you know, and data and quantified stuff. But nobody had ever heard that about music before. Nobody had ever approached it that way. And because I came out of the private sector, I didn't know bupkis about how to run a nonprofit, how to do an arts organization. So I didn't have any of those defaults. So I could approach it kind of with fresh eyes. So.
Yeah. I'm loving all your Yiddish words, by the way.
I don't know why I'm going all Yiddish on
it.
You, but yeah,
it.
It's, they're the most descriptive.
No, keep
like,
them coming.
Okay. All right.
So you mentioned data and music and nobody had really done it in that way. When you were obsessing with your family about something like Music Portland or the need for it, what was the data that you were seeing that inspired you to start the organization?
Music is big in Portland. How big? How many bands are there? Seems like there's a lot of businesses. How many? Are there recording studios here? You know, how does what we do compare to what they do? You know, arts and culture figured out years ago that these quantifiable reports, and in some cases, you know, sort of approaching culture and saying symphony is valuable because everybody that goes to the symphony spends an average of $32.95 on dinner beforehand. Mm. So there's an economic impact of this cultural activity. And nobody had ever done that looking at popular music. And that's part of the challenge. There isn't a word for it. Non-arts music. But if you call it for-profit music, you know, it's sort of like, you got to use finger quotes. Mm. It's nominally for-profit music. You can't call it independent because, you know, a chamber ensemble that plays gigs for money and records some music to sell is no different than a punk band who plays gigs for money and records music to sell. But the chamber orchestra is eligible for grants and the punk music isn't. And sure. So there's this weird definition of cultural value based on tax status, which makes zero sense. And it doesn't acknowledge cultural worth, you know, and impact and the number of people that are engaged with it and all of these other things. So yeah, data is useful to get yourself insert yourself into the conversation. So, and I can dive into data, to factoids as soon as you want, but I'm trying to stay.
I love data.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Of course I do.
Yeah, you know, it's like our economic impact study. We had the state legislature recognize commercial music as different from arts music as an emerging economic sector in 2022. And in early 2023, we completed our census and the first economic impact study of that sector. And the NERC group at PSU said that conservatively, their numbers were underreporting the reality by 30% or more because of the weird vagaries of music as an industry. None of the standard industry codes have kept up with it. So that CD Baby is, I think, clocked in the government's eyes as other retail excluding tobacco. So that's hundreds of millions of dollars of music industry income and revenue that music doesn't get credit for.
Interesting.
So we had to kind of, you know, PSU really came up. We said it was going to be hard and they were like, oh, we've done hard before. And they were like, no, you're right. This is really hard. But they said that even with it easily 30% underreporting, it's $3.8 billion in statewide economic impact.
For Oregon,
with the large majority of it being in the Portland metro area. And they use some odd sort of calculus to come up with another 500 or another half a billion in economic impact. So about 500 and some odd thousand. And is that right? Yes, that's right. And then the Arts in America report just came out and has had big fanfare that the entire arts community is generating $842 million in economic impact, and that's that. Yeah. Those dinners and, you know, sort of other things. So our 30% underreported $500 million versus their $900 million, you know, it's like it's on par. The difference is that that group has received millions of dollars in public and private money, grants, philanthropy, and, you know, our group hasn't. Meanwhile, we're generating, you know, nearly $4 billion in economic output so that we're employing people and we're driving, you know, we're creating labor revenue. By our counts and compared to other analogous reports, our commercial music industry in Oregon employs more people than cannabis, fishing, or timber in the state. And yet I mean, we talk about the forgotten things. It is the forgotten industry. And the thing about that is it's got such this massive potential to knit all the stuff that everybody's trying to draw these threads together. They're trying to figure, how do we revitalize downtown? How do we, rebuild the civic pride in our place? Or how do we boost our state revenues? Or how do we empower rural communities? Or how do we, and I'm like, dude, I'm right here. We've got a thing. This is an amazing tool. We've got more instrument gear manufacturers than any other state in the country. For the state to actually recognize that, attract that, those businesses can be anywhere in the state. You could have massive, economic development initiatives that really engage communities around the intersection of culture and craft, and make things that are just amazing. So,
well, and there's the economic perspective. There's also the healing perspective.
Oh,
music heals and helps you transgress.
Mm-hmm.
Music lifts communities up. It brings mm-hmm. communities together. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Like, what does music mean to you in that way?
I love the phrase folk music. And I think folk music has become a thing that people think, it's banjos. And full disclosure, I play the banjo.
Don't forget the fiddle. That's like my and then favorite the instrument. Fiddle.
And the fiddle too. But if you folk music at its core is the music of a people in a place at a time. Woody Guthrie made folk music because he was telling the stories of the real life experiences of those people at that time, and particularly the people that whose voices weren't being heard. Well, to my mind, that's hip hop. I mean, that's punk rock. That's, it's like folk music is vital to the way that a place identifies itself and communicates its values and shares its feelings and connects its humanity. I was jamming on this earlier, that collective effervescence is one of my favorite social science terms, because everybody's got a social science favorite.
That could be your stage name.
It could. Oh, totally. Oh, I like it. Collective effervescence was coined in the 1920s. And as soon as you say it, people go, oh, I know what you mean. And it's that thing, and it happens in, it used to happen in churches, because that was where people did it.
What I was
going
to say is we took my mom to the gospel choir with the organ symphony.
Right.
And I felt like in a whole other world.
Yeah. Yeah. It's this thing, and where you can look across the room at somebody you're never going to meet, you're never going to talk to, and you kind of give them a nod, or you smile at them, or your eyes lock. Because you're both experiencing the same thing at the same moment, and it's transcendent, and it connects your humanity in a way that you don't get at the grocery store, you don't get at the movie theater. And I believe, this is my my weird sort of rapturous thing, but I believe it is the foundation of civilization. It is the thing that's, if you have that effervescence with somebody else, you walk out of there changed. You cannot say that the people I don't know don't matter. They got to float their own boat. You can't say I'm going to vote against people. It's like it builds a community.
It's kind of like the smile. Like music is universal language. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it, climbs out of your car radio and grabs you in the heart, shakes you around a little bit.
And then you don't stop singing that same annoying song all day and night.
Don't stop singing. And it was a thing that we did. I used to work with Wordstock, and I lobbied for years until they were like, shut up. That's how I get a lot of stuff done. I'm just annoying until people say, fine, do it. But I did a whole thing on songwriting as literary craft. And there was this one great panel that we put together that I think Louis Longmire, the amazing Louis Longmire, was shepherding, and it was a whole discussion about pronouns, and you think about music, you write a song that is I do this, all these people are singing it in their car or at home or through their earbuds, and they're saying I, and it's like you can put ideas through people and process them through their hearts. And make, if you sing a song often enough, it becomes part of you. It's like music is this incredibly potent magic that we all need to use, and we all need to leverage, and we all need to care about, because it is, it's like the shot to the heart, you know, and it connects us in a way that really nothing else can.
Well, and forget Britney, bitch. It's Michael, bitch. you know who does that for me is Florence and the Machine. Mm-hmm. I've seen her probably four times. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of that collective effervescence. Mm-hmm. I can't say that word. It's a tough one.
Bubbles. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's I mean, Anna Tivell just destroys me.
Alabama Shakes when I've seen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, Britney singing. It's just like.
Yeah. Incredible. Yeah, it's about finding the thing that, you know, that does it, and then listening to it a lot, and then sharing it with other people, making sure that the music that matters to you is what you're getting other people to love. And, you know, and that actually leads me rather seamlessly into Portland Music Month, because Portland Music Month is a month of music discovery. You know, it's of course wants to make sure that the people that love to go see music all the time go out and see live music. But even more, it's important for this month for people that maybe never have, or that haven't done it very much and they don't know the bands. We make it so easy because you can browse by ear, you can browse by genre, you can explore and say, well, okay, what's this venue like? Is it going to be sketchy, or do I like it? Or it's all the things that maybe keep people from going out, and trying to make it as easy as possible and saying, this is, you need this. You may not know it, but you need this. And Portland has it in such abundance that it's just, it's so valuable and awesome. And I just hope everybody comes out. You can come out and be masked. If you're worried about COVID, that's cool. We know how to cope. Yeah. You know?
How did you find the bands that are performing? Was there some sort of request for audition, or is it that they all know that that's the week? And so
we, for months beforehand, we were communicating to our Music Portland community, to make sure they were hitting up the venues and saying they wanted to play a Music Month show.
Got it.
Because the venues book the shows, the venues pay the artists, the venues, you know, and the artists negotiate full compensation for the performers. And then on top of that, with the artist's permission, they add a dollar or two upcharge on the ticket. And that's clearly stated on the ticket. And that is partly to remind music goers that these artists need support. You know, there needs to be a fund to support music projects to keep music going. And we also then have sponsors that half of their money goes into promoting the shows and half of it goes directly into the Echo Fund. So last year, the Echo Fund, we gave away about $40,000. And this year we gave away almost 60.
That's wonderful.
And we're hoping to top 100,000 this year. So yeah, it's really, it's exciting. It was this weird thing that we thought up with some people that were part of the Music Fest Northwest original planning team. And we were just looking at it and going, okay, if I don't have the money to throw a festival where I buy all the bands and then take all the risk, how do we make a festival that's going to raise money for the Echo Fund and celebrate and promote music? And this is what we came up with.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, it works. And
I'm going to look at, there's always time for music, just like there's always time to eat. So I'm going to look and find which things to go to. I didn't ask you, I mean, what is your favorite music or band or song? I mean, I'm sure you have tons of them, but can you tell me, like,
it's such a mood thing. Like, I've been heavy into Jay Graves lately, just like something scratching a good itch there. And, you know, they come out of the whole Riot Girl, Pussy Riot, you know, kind of Team Dresh, Go Portland. You know, it's different days, different moods. As I say, I love Anna Tivell. Mita just slays me. I think I'm leaning a lot into female voices this season, but yeah. What else?
Do any of the other, you know, like, not older, but, you know, like Tegan and Sarah or Kate Bush or, you know, who like...
Oh, yeah. I mean, Kate Bush, absolutely. And, you know, before this whole Stranger Things business, all you Johnny Come Latelys, you know, yeah, right? Back in the day. And
yeah, it's great. She's having a career resurgence.
I know.
Yeah.
I love it. And my daughter, who's a musician as well, she grew up on Kate Bush. You know, she grew up on, you know, Clem Snide and Elephant Six and, you know, all of these crazy things. Nick Jaina and Run On Sentence and a bunch of amazing local bands as well as, you know, national bands. Yeah, it's just music has always been a really big part. I booked bands and worked in dive bars in Boston after college and just loved it. And then went on and represented commercial artists for a while before getting into data and publishing. But I think just always stayed in there. You know, it's I play the instruments that nobody asks to hear. I play accordion, banjo, tuba, Irish burin, really toxic fiddle, and represented as toxic fiddle. I've been credited on an album playing drunken tuba.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I know. See, it's really something.
People love the banjo.
They like to think they do, and then when
Kyle's laughing in the booth,
I know when
Kyle loves the banjo.
When you say you play the guitar, people say, oh, that's awesome. Play something. When you say you play the banjo, they go, that's great for you. That's really great. Yeah. You know, but it's a different thing. And it's by design that
that's great for you.
It's by design that I play those things because yeah. I don't aspire to be great. I can play anything by ear.
What about the harp? Maybe you can learn the harp. No pressure.
That's really annoying. I'm working on bagpipe, though. I am working on bagpipe. That's another one, yeah. Yeah.
People ask you, I feel like if you play certain instruments, like banjo, people ask for Ozuzana. Bagpipe, people ask for Danny Boy.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's, the funny thing is that when we have a jam, you know, we have lots of musician friends and people come over here, people will be playing or, you know, if it's like an old time circle, and I show up with a tuba and they're like, oh my God, but it's a bass you play with your face. So, you know, deal with it. And they like it. Or, you know, if we're jamming and I bring out an accordion, they're like, oh,
I love the accordion.
But then, I know. I love the accordion.
My brother,
too.
When we were growing up, we took lessons for a little bit. My brother took accordion lessons. I took keyboard or piano lessons, but I think the accordion is very special because you can, if you're really coordinated, you can kind of like do a little dance while you're playing the accordion.
Oh, so you were aiming high. Yeah. And I'll see. Yeah. A little dance. Have you ever seen Jet Black Pearl? Jet Black Pearl is a local performer. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And she plays accordion and sings and dances and just fantastic. Really, really great. So, I mean, any kind of music you can imagine is done well here in Portland. Any kind of music. It's insane. So, yeah, super fun.
Cal, what do you play? Cowbell? Triangle?
You play upright?
Cello?
Drums?
Oh, xylophone. That was drums. I thought you were doing, Cal's doing all kinds
of... You play guitar?
Instrument.
Vibraphone?
Instrument charades in the booth.
And a... And you sing loud and angry.
Kyle was in a band for a while. Is your band still going on?
What was it?
It's called. It should be called Nothing You've Ever Heard Of. That'd be a good name for a band.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, no, Kyle just did some good charades of musical instruments.
Yeah, that was fantastic. That was great. Yeah.
I play the guitar.
I play bones.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I play guitar really, really shitty, but I'm working
jam.
On it.
We should
I'm
jam.
I'm working on it. I have a guitar teacher, Hannah Demo, who's her own, you know, musician, but she said she's done teaching people, but she's blessed me with lessons.
She's sticking with it. Okay.
So you mentioned that you went to school in Boston. Are you from Boston?
Nope.
Okay, where are you from?
I grew up on 34th and Thurman. On the edge of Forest Park.
You still have a little bit of an accent, though. Maybe when when you're in Boston, you picked it up.
No, maybe ironically, my daughter you know, was with a South Boston babysitter, and she came on and said, "Mom, I lost my octopus." And I was like, "Oh, we got to get you back to Oregon." But no, I grew up in Northwest Portland, and my grandmother and the family homestead was on in Sullivan's Gulch. And when I moved back after 19 years with a husband and three kids in tow, bought the house next door to the one I was born in, my grandma's house.
Oh, wow.
So I live in Sullivan's Gulch now. So it's weird. When I was out east, they said, "You're a little too West Coast." And out here, they say, "You're a little too East Coast," because I talk really fast. And
yeah, I like it. I think it's great. Yeah. Well, when I was growing up, you know, my dad was from Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And then my mom is from the Valley. So I would say I'm, you know, part East Coast, either sophistication or Boston. I don't know.
Yankee Valley.
And then also part Valley girl.
You're totally Valley. You're a Valley Yankee. Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
But yeah, I have a lot of family that's in Massachusetts.
In the Boston area? Or
Close to Boston. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went to Smith and Wesleyan. And my alma mater sound like a firearm, but
that's why you're into all these female empowerment songs that are amazing.
Maybe they just I don't know, they're speaking to me now.
I love them. I mean, yeah, I think they're great.
Yeah. And I'm sure I'll get, as soon as I leave, I'll be like, "Oh, I forgot about this band and this band and this band. They're amazing." And they're just, yeah, there's too many to even know.
So when you left, I'm going back to the corporate job situation. I mean, were you trying to retire? Were you looking for a career change? Did it just kind of happen because you had this idea and then it led to that?
And like, my family got sick of me complaining. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I was, my company had been a small, like, I was the fourth employee, and we were up to like 160 people. And then we were acquired by an English company. And I didn't want to work in a big corporate thing. So I was like, yeah, I gave them 6 months notice and said, I want to make sure I leave honorably because I've been here for 15 years. And then I stepped away.
And if someone's listening and they want to do something scary, fun, daring, you know, either start a nonprofit or a business, or treat their music as a business. Mm-hmm. You know, I talk a lot about that.
Mm-hmm.
What's your advice for those folks?
Join Music Portland. A working musician is $25 a year. You know, we make it super affordable, but it starts to connect you to a whole bunch of different resources, not the least of which is our newest member benefit with a little group I like to call Rational Unicorn Legal Services. Where we're doing a monthly sort of office hours with Michael, so that people can kind of bring the issues, larger issues that are vexing them. And we will, you know, and it's just a way to ask some, not specific questions, not detailed contract review, but, you know, the questions you just wish you had a buddy in law, yeah, that could answer. And so small groups, members only. And then I think literally talk to you guys. I mean, talk to Rational, because there's just a lot of mistakes you don't have to make, you know. And I think musicians get into it because they love music, not because they want to be legal experts or they want to be accountants, or they have to kind of be some of those things, but they don't have to do it alone.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of what Music Portland is trying to do, is to assemble the resources for aspiring professionals or established professionals, just to make it a little bit easier, to make Portland a place where you can do it. You know, I think for years, Portland has taken it for granted, and people have continued to make amazing music here despite Portland. I want them to make great music and have amazing music experiences here because it's Portland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I appreciate that. And, you know, I work with a lot of creatives, and it's hard to be good at what you're doing, you know, creatively. And then also, when you have all kinds of government and admin, mm-hmm, and business tasks, you sort of get lost in all of that, mm-hmm, right? So, but I always tell folks that are creative, you have to be good at the creativity. You also have to be good at the business.
Yeah.
And music is a business.
Absolutely.
I mean, just like any other type of art, you have to ask yourself, you know, am I treating this like a business with budget and expenses and marketing? And, you know, I'm in a band. Do I have a partnership agreement?
Yeah. Every musician is a music entrepreneur. And like any entrepreneur, they have to take that part of it seriously. Otherwise, they're a really creative hobbyist. And God bless them. There's plenty of room for that. But sometimes it's hard. And this is when the tough love or the mom voice comes in, where it's people are complaining that they aren't receiving the rewards that they believe they deserve when they haven't done the work and they haven't looked at the whole project in a realistic way, because it is a business. They have to think about it that way. If they want to just go out and seek arts grants, I wish them all the luck. It's not going to work. Yeah. We're like 41st or something in the US for arts and culture funding. Those people already don't have enough what they need. So, you know, an indie artist coming in to try and get their record funded there, it's just not going to work.
The thing you said about being a hobbyist, you know, and God bless them, we need hobbies. I've also had the conversation with some of my clients who are in a band about the people who are in the band with you. You know, for them, is it a career? Mm-hmm. Like, you want a career, you want a business. Is it that for them as well?
Yeah.
I mean, you need to have like a Jesus moment, Damascus moment, whatever you want to call it, of like, hey, bandmates, this for me is a career. Is this a career for you? And if it's not, then you need to to move on. And I have a couple clients who have, and they're in another band and they're a lot more successful, but they also enjoy life better because they're with a creative group that's all on the same kind of
wavelength.
Calibrated.
Yeah. No, it's a really good point. It's, you know, I think I remember one where they had this debate and I heard about it, and, you know, the group was asking one player, like, where do you think we're going to be in 5 years? And he was like, well, I think I'm going to, you know, probably still be playing some good shows in town and like that. And he's like, where do you all think we're going to be? And they're like, Letterman. And he's like, I don't think I'm a right fit for this. And it is about right sizing, you know, your ambition, your collaborators. And I think a lot of what we're hoping in Music Portland to do, like tonight, there's a First Monday. Every month, there is a free and open professional music gathering. You can go to musicportland.org, look on our events page, and find out where they are. They always have a professional development aspect, and then lots and lots of, you know, gathering and networking and finding new people. We had a holiday mixer that everybody had a name tag that said, hi, my name is, I play the, I'm in a Czech committed music project, or I am new music project curious, you know? So everybody went around and was sort of finding new people. But that's the point, is that, you know, I know it's hard to keep your head down and be trying to make rent, but music is a collaborative activity. And you need a community, you need conversations, and you need a team. And that team might be your buddy who's really good at social media, where you suck, and, you know, and you're really good at admin and accounting. Share, like, exchange value. Find the collaborators that may not be musical collaborators, but that are business collaborators. And build communities around that, and make sure that you're tapping experts, like, for instance, your team. But, you know, it is about building, you know, understand not everybody's good at everything, and they shouldn't have to be.
One of the things, we're almost ready to do 5 questions where I ask you some questions, but before we talk about that, I really wanted to talk to you about the PBOT collaboration and how creative that is. Can you share with us how that got
absolutely
running and what that looks like?
Absolutely. So I believe that Greg Raceman at PBOT reached out to me because they had created these PBOT plazas. They'd closed off, I think, 22 streets all around the city to make these outdoor plazas. And it was, you know, particularly during COVID when there needed to be public gathering spaces. And very much in the model, like in Spain, everybody comes out of their houses at night and they all hang out together and the kids play and it's delightful. So he reached out saying, we've made these venues, but we don't know what to do with them. Can you help us? So we created a pilot program with very limited funding from PBOT to create free music by professional musicians all around the city in these PBOT plazas. And last year was a pilot really trying to demonstrate to abutting businesses that actually hosting and paying for professional music is a big boon to their business. So what they would, the businesses would receive notice in advance of who the artists that were going to be playing for the next 3 weeks, so they could promote it to their customers to come in to enjoy a show and be able to take credit for it. It went phenomenally well. And so we're right now actually in the process of mapping out the next year. And I've already got different large companies and organizations that are viewing it as a really significant part of the revitalization of downtown. You know, we've talked with real estate people about taking over, you know, empty business storefronts and creating music series within them. And, you know, it's just, again, it's like music is this thing that has the power to do all this stuff. And so any program like that, that starts to tap it, that engages the tourism sector, engages the hotels and the hospitality and engages the businesses and engages the city and the community and the artists, it's a win. It's just, it seems like such a natural thing. And it feels like, you know, you're pushing a rock up a hill. It feels like we're kind of getting towards the top and it's going to get easier. I think it's going to start rolling. I just hope my muscles are conditioned to run fast down the hill, because it feels like, I think once people get that aha moment, it's going to be like, cool, great. How do we make sure that Music Portland has the community galvanized enough to be able to deliver, you know, so people can find the artists they're looking for, that corporations can find amazing local artists to, you know, play at their offices, or, you know, that real estate people that have empty space can activate them and make them positive. Make them a, you know, even when they're empty, make sure that they're parts of the community. And that could be dance. I mean, that could be anything. It could be movies or dance.
I commend you for, you know, the creative collaborations, and you have all the pieces fitting together, right?
It's coming, you know, and that's the, you know, data for me, it's always, you start with data and then you build relationships. And then you evolve those relationships, and then you start to string everything together.
And then Mira takes over the world.
And then, but then you pull the cinch cord, and it goes like that.
Okay, so questions.
Yep.
What's your favorite quote or mantra to live by?
All I can think of is my high school quote from Lincoln High School, "Go Cardinals." Which was, dogmatism is puppyism grown up.
Oh, I love that. Did you make that up?
I don't know. I don't remember.
That's great. That almost reminds me in a different way of, it's outside of a dog, a book is a man's best friend. Inside of a dog, it's too dark to read. That's a Groucho Marx quote.
I love it.
Okay. What is your favorite childhood memory?
My favorite childhood memory is probably just being up in Forest Park. I walked out my back door onto the Aspen Trail. Oh, and wow. So I spent tons and tons and tons of time up in Forest Park. And okay, here's the best story out of that. I was 13 and moony. Nobody understood me. And I was, you know, I was suffering, and I walked way up into the woods and up the Wildwood Trail. And I've been walking for a long time when I realized there was a guy behind me. And I walked a little bit faster, and he walked a little bit faster. And then I turned around, and he was walking up the hill at me, just going like this, with just the creepiest look on his face, shaking his head. And I hadn't seen anybody in a long time, and I was so deep in the woods, nobody would hear me. So I started screaming for, my family's pet crow. So I'm yelling for Poe, and out of the woods flew Poe. He'd been tracking me in the woods, and he landed on my shoulder and screamed at the guy.
Are you Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman?
Yes, yes, I am. And the guy was so weirded out, he ran away. So I always wear like a crow skull on my neck. Oh. It's here somewhere. There it is. There it is.
What a story.
And yeah, and it's so I don't know. I grew up in a family that like around the kitchen table, they debated how to stop the freeway, which they did. And, you know, how to make bike paths all over the city, which they did. You know, Portland was this place where citizen activists made shit happen.
Yeah.
And somewhere along the line, too many of us have atrophied or felt powerless in the face of, you know, other power. And we got to change that.
Yeah, let's get back to it.
We got to take it back.
I'm in.
I know you are. Counting on it.
Who would you have lunch with that's a person dead or alive? You could have lunch with someone.
These are hard questions.
That's why we ask them.
Wow. Who would I have lunch with? Maybe Kate Bush. I think she's kind of an amazing weirdo. And I think she would be just fascinating. Yeah. You know, she never has colored in the lines in any interview I've ever heard of her. It's just like, it's like fluid. And I think that would be amazing.
Does Kate Bush know Bjork?
I don't know.
Because I think Bjork is kind of odd.
Kind of the same thing.
I want to know more about her.
You know, we drove all around Iceland, my husband and I, and there are all these signs that just say Bjork on them, but it's not like promoting her. It's a word in Icelandic for something. We never could figure out what it says. Is it like exit?
We'll have to
or
check the Googles.
I know.
What's a failure that you had that ended up working out for good or for the best?
Okay, here's one that's actually about Music Portland. Coming out of the corporate sector, as I did, where everybody understood trade organizations and the value of them. And, you know, there's six different trade organizations representing the cannabis industry. I'm like, okay, people get this. You know, you need champions fighting for you. I thought, well, I'm going to come and be a trade organization for the music community. And they're going to greet me like Parisians throwing flowers on American tanks. It's going to be gorgeous. I was like, okay, so we take a year, we get everybody in the pool from the music community, and then we can talk about corporates and fan members and all kind. I'm still begging musicians to pay $25 a year. Mm. I think that they've come to appreciate and respect what we've done, but they don't yet see that this, I know they've been exploited by so many people for so long that they're like, finally, somebody's doing something for me. But the fact is, I'm unpaid. You know, we have one part-time paid person. All this stuff has happened because people have given. People have volunteered their energies, or I've volunteered my energies, or things like that. And it can't keep going. So it is both a success in what we've been able to accomplish. It's a failure in communicating that we all need to stand together. There's so many of us that it shouldn't cost any of us a lot to sustain this effort, but it does. It will take all of us. And
if Portland is to look like Portland, it needs financial backing of the arts and whatever else.
Yeah. I mean, it needs all kinds of things, but as a member organization, which is what Music Portland is, it needs the people that it is fighting for to step in, each of them with their little bit. And it hasn't happened yet. And I feel like it's a failure on my part because we haven't communicated it well enough, I guess. And I just feel like if I can somehow break the code, people will go like, oh, heck yeah, of course.
I don't think it's fair. I think you're almost there.
Really? Okay. That's good. Well, that's the win from my failure.
I mean, as someone who took 9 bar exams to become a lawyer.
9! Wow.
And I've had other businesses. I don't think things are a failure. I think when you get there, you're so prepared because of all the things you've been through that when you have that moment, you're able to pull together all of the other randomness, failures, learning lessons, skills.
Yeah.
And then you sort of catapult from there.
No, I think that's probably very true. Yeah. And it's, you know, I think I mentioned to you in the off that I've been having some challenges just personally with family stuff. And the way that this community has stepped up has just been amazing. And it makes me realize that I'm so like, my work style is so like, cool, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get it done. I'm going to dig in. I'm going to not sleep. I'm going to work harder. I'm going to, you know, and by backing off a little bit, because I needed to, it gave the room for this community to step up. And they have so graciously. So
making other leaders lead in their best way, embracing who they are.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's something, you know, I need to learn.
What are you watching or reading right now?
I'm a big fan of post-apocalyptic fiction and Arctic exploration nonfiction. I just finished something about the Belgica Antarctic expedition that they always go wrong. They're always harrowing. There's something about those kinds of things that I really like, because it's like the worst possible thing has happened. And now we investigate how humans react. And I love seeing the nobility and the just bullshittery that comes out of those moments, you know, from a writer's mind or from actual history. And I just find them incredibly hopeful. When I really wigged out about the possibility of a big earthquake, I went deep into dystopian, you know, post-apocalyptic. The one we dare not say its name. And then eventually I was like, okay, I've read every post-apocalyptic book I can find. I need to go and get net trained so I can respond in the emergency. And that made me feel a little better.
Do you have a basement with stockpiles of toilet paper and water?
I have. Every time I hear somebody go, oh no, I haven't really done anything, I put more water in my garage, you know. I just like, yeah, so we've got a wall of water that we swap out. And yeah,
my husband and I, we enjoy post-apocalyptic things too, but we've also really enjoyed, like, Last of Us is one, I guess.
Yeah, you know?
But
yeah,
we've also really been enjoying these like cult movies or cult documentaries.
Love them.
Love them.
Love them.
Love that tree for you. Cults are so fascinating.
They really are. They really are. And just the way that we have the capacity that we have within us to just surrender common sense for the sake of belonging or the sake of, you know, promise or love or any of the things. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So if I could tap that in defense of music, if I could really get people to go, you know, I'm going to do this just for no sense at all, maybe I could make that part of my, maybe I should just be a cult. Maybe Music Portland should be a cult. What do you think? I don't know. We'll think it through. We'll work this. We'll workshop it.
And then finally, you know, what are some shout outs you have? How can people find you on social media or website?
We are all over the place. You got Portland Music Month is on social media and portlandmusicmonth.org. That has all the shows. You're going to 150 shows at 26 venues lasting all month. Go and find a band you didn't know you were going to love and then love them hard. Musicportland.org is where you can find out all about Music Portland, about the opportunities, about the free music program, about professional development, about the sound legal work with Michael, about all the brand new member benefits that are coming out in February. And let me see. Oh, and then Music Oregon is where you go to find out about the Echo Fund, to apply for grants and our new entrepreneurial equity program. And there's just all kinds of stuff going on. I think this year we're really hoping to build out some really good working committees. So people that want to have an impact and help to shape how this culture and community goes forward, we're really looking for people that want to step in and help us define it and build it.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate not only you being on my podcast, but the work that you're doing. And it's so important to build communities. It's so important to support musicians. So keep it up. You're already doing something great, but you're on the precipice. I'll use a big word because you've been using big words. You're on the precipice of something great.
As I say, the rock is about to roll down the hill, and I'm just going to be like chasing it. So it'll be good for me.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Authentic, vulnerable, unfiltered. Thank you for listening to All of Your Business podcast hosted by Michael Jonas. This show is produced by Kyle Gilmer of Residual Audio. Music written and recorded by Luke Neal at Track 11 Music. Special thanks to xray.fm. You can listen to X-Ray FM live streaming online everywhere at xray.fm. Radio is yours. Listen to every All of Your Business episode, past and future, on your favorite podcatcher app. You can also find every episode on allofyourbusinesspodcast.com.